universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Well, there was a mass shooting yesterday. Five people were killed, and you haven't heard anything about it. Because this happened in Russia. It was an Islamic terrorist attack against Christians. Five women killed. And we have to perpetuate this myth that gun violence doesn't happen in other countries. Yeah, it does. And you know who stopped this shooting? Interestingly enough, it was security guards and police officers with guns who stopped this shooting. Or he would have gone through the church killing more people. This is what the news media does not want you to see. So we have a media blackout of a situation where you got a Muslim yelling, Allahu Akbar. Yes, my God of death is greater than the God that you worship. And trying to prove it as he guns down women in broad daylight. And they captured it on closed circuit television. You would think that this would be something that would be sensational enough that the American news media would be interested in it. But they're not. They're not. Because we have to portray guns as a problem and America as unique in that regard. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, the fact that we've had other issues in China, for example. It was 4 years ago about this time. It was the beginning of end of February, beginning of March. You had 33 people killed with some knife-wielding individuals going through a train station. 130 people killed in China. This was with people with knives. How did they stop them? It was people with guns. See, only the government has guns in China, and that presents another case to us as a bit of a problem. Chairman Mao said power comes out of the barrel of a gun, and he made sure that his government was the only one with guns. So instead of 33 people being killed with knives, and of course, you know, we're told, hey, these mass events don't happen. Well, you know, they always do happen in places where people are unarmed. Where you have people with knives, they rule the people without knives. When you have people with guns, they rule the people with knives. That's just human nature. It's something that we need to take some time to explain to our virtue signaling high school students in Florida as they presume to lecture all of us. These are people who haven't had any experience. They don't know anything about human nature. They don't know anything about history. That's other people's experience, by the way, kids. You don't want to learn history. You haven't experienced anything, and you're going to lecture us about the Second Amendment? You're going to lecture us? No, you're not. You're not. You're not going to take the guns away from us. And we're going to tell you what the real problem is again. Some people are starting to talk about it, but it needs to be said. It's the drugs. It's the drugs. You turn your kids over to a government school to raise your kids to individuals. You know nothing about them except that they've been approved by the government. You know, kind of like those drugs that they hand out to your kids that you don't know about. Those drugs were approved by the government as well. Though that makes them safe, doesn't it? And it makes the information that they give your kids to turn them into Antifa activists, that makes the education system safe too, doesn't it? You better get concerned about what's being taught to your kids in school. You better get concerned about not only what they're putting in their minds, but what they're feeding them in terms of drugs to make their jobs a bit easier. It starts with the ADD drugs and it goes from there. Any kind of behavioral problem, they medicate it. And this is the world in which we live. The world where just a couple of decades ago, fathers who would go to a school in Massachusetts and say, I don't want you teaching sex education to my kid in second grade or third grade. And they'd say, get off of our property right now or we'll have you arrested. Because when you drop your kid off at the front door of the school, they belong to us. We act in place of the parents. It's called in loco parentis is what the legal position of that is. And so now instead of them teaching your second or third graders age inappropriate information that you may think is inappropriate, now they're giving them gender confusion, gender fluidity, because they have to pretend that the kids can make up their minds not only about what gender they are, but whether or not they can consent to sex. You understand where we're going with this, don't you? All right, we're going to be right back. I have a lot of news that's coming out. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, February the 19th, 2018. I'm David Knight. As I was saying at the top of the hour, there was a mass shooting yesterday. You haven't heard about it because it doesn't fit the carefully crafted narrative coming out of the Democrat press, which is guns are the thing that has to be banned. We got to just eliminate all guns. And I have to say to these high school students out here who want to lecture us, I want to remind them of what happened with alcohol prohibition, with drug prohibition. You know, we prohibited those, didn't we? Did they go away? No, actually, they didn't. We had more intensified use of alcohol and in more intense forms during alcohol prohibition. The same thing has happened with drug prohibition. We've just extended it for 47 years now. And destroying in the process our law enforcement organizations, our rule of law, our individual liberties, creating massive incarceration. So if you think it is going to work just by prohibiting it, and let me tell you something else. One of the core things about drug prohibition, besides the organized crime that it creates and the corruption of law enforcement and government that it creates, one of the other things that's not talked about that often is that it takes a more intensified form. Because, you know, all rules are off, and you have people involved in the trade then who, instead of trying to operate in a free market environment where they try to offer things better than other people, and they've got some rules that they have to play with, all the rules are off. So you've got some competition you don't like, you just kill them. And if any innocent people get in the way, you kill them too. That's a key part of what's happening in the mass shootings that we see in Chicago and elsewhere. And of course, it's only intensified in Chicago because it is a gun-free zone, like Baltimore, like Washington, D.C. And so if you want to prohibit guns, you're going to see some very interesting forms of firearms created that you never dreamed of. It's going to be very interesting times. I mean, people are going to look at this and going to say, wow, that's quite innovative, isn't it? Never thought a gun would be able to do that. Because what you're going to do is you're going to unleash technological innovation that is unrestrained by any morality or law. In the same way we've done that with drug prohibition, with alcohol prohibition. I was saying to my wife over the weekend, I said, you know, I was driving home the other day and I was thinking about alcohol prohibition and the many ways that I've seen it work in my life with people that I've known, what alcohol has done to them. And I said, if I was around at the time that they created alcohol prohibition, because they did it constitutionally, they had enough respect for the Constitution that they created a constitutional amendment, which we no longer respect our Constitution. We just say, well, we're just going to prohibit this or prohibit that or whatever. We don't care what the 10th Amendment says. We don't care what the Constitution says. The 10th Amendment and the 18th Amendment are all the proof you need to show that we have absolutely no authority for the war on drugs. So we've destroyed our Constitution. Has it worked? Huh. You know it hasn't worked. You know it hasn't worked. It's not a law enforcement problem. It's a law destruction problem. It's what we have created here. And so I was saying to my wife as I was driving home, I was thinking about it. I said, you know, based on the information that people had at the time they did the Volstead Act and they created the 18th Amendment, I would have voted to prohibit alcohol. I think it still remains our most dangerous drug. But I would have done that. But in hindsight, because we have learned from history, I would not support the drug prohibition that we have today, simply because it's proven to be a failure and because it's done unconstitutionally. As I said, when they prohibited alcohol, they did it with respect for the Constitution. They did it legally. And none of the stuff that we've had since then has been done legally. But, of course, we have a government that says it's okay for the population to have opioids, and we push them on them very hard. I'm going to talk about that. Coming up later in the broadcast, we have a very interesting development in Philadelphia. We have the district attorney there saying we're going to sue the big pharma companies for the opioid epidemic, and we're going to decriminalize marijuana because we understand what the danger is. And we understand that if we really want to solve the problem, we have to understand what the problem is. Hey, you can't just... And this is a lesson for both the left and the right. When we look at gun prohibition of the left and we look at drug prohibition of the right, they're both based on the idea that we want to stop people from being hurt. Conservatives and people on the right don't want to see people's lives destroyed with drugs. It kills people. It destroys entire families. It destroys society. And so we don't want to see that happen. So what we do, we use law enforcement to try to hammer it down, even though that's not the fundamental problem. And now we see people on the left who don't want to see people shot. Nobody does. And they want to use law enforcement and prohibition in a way that will not help. There are ways, there are things that we can do. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's first talk about this shooting that nobody wants to talk about. Closed circuit television footage from the site of the deadly shooting at a Christian church in southern Russia. It claimed the lives of five people, and it shows a man armed with a rifle gunning down two women in broad daylight as he shouted, "Allahu Akbar." And as they translate it by RT and by Sky News, of course, they put in there, "God is great." That is not what Allahu Akbar means. First of all, understand that Allah is not the same God that you worship. And what he's saying is, my God is greater than your God. That's what that really means. God is Allah is greater is really what that translates to. Four people, all of them women, died at the scene, and another woman died during surgery later. Five people, including two security guards, fatally shot the assailant. Okay, so good guys with guns stopped the bad guy who just walked up and started shooting down unarmed women at a church. But again, it does not fit the narrative in America. We've got to demonize guns. We've got to make it gun violence unique to America. We cannot say, as H.R. McMaster has lectured us over and over again, you cannot talk about Islamic terror. That just doesn't exist, according to H.R. McMaster. And so we can't talk about any of that stuff. And of course, we cannot talk about Christian persecution, because the left would love to see that. And you're going to see more of that. That's one of the reasons why Christians are not going to give up their weapons. We are not going to allow the government to take away our means of self-defense. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, five people, including two security guards, are fatally shot the assailant as he attempted to flee, and the churchgoers are barricaded inside. The guy was armed with a hunting rifle. Oh, not a military rifle, just a hunting rifle, because, you know, you don't have to have a very sophisticated rifle if you're the only one who is armed. And then he was shot dead. He targeted people, worshipers at the Russian Orthodox Church in a mainly Muslim region. But of course, going back 4 years ago, I think it's always important to remember when we're told all these lies about violence being uniquely American and violence being uniquely firearms, 33 people dead, 130 injured in a China knife-wielding spree 4 years ago. Four of the attackers were shot dead. That's how they stopped it. Isn't that interesting? Four of the attackers were shot dead. It was Zhenjing separatist forces, and they said that, they kept that under control. What is your defense against lunatics? Or what is your defense against governments that are out of control? Because the real story coming out of China, of course, it's an old story, but it needs to be told to our kids, especially those in Florida who don't seem to understand where this is coming from. They probably worship Chairman Mao, the man who said power comes out of the barrel of a gun. And he killed 78 million, not just 33. And when we look at Clint Eastwood's film, where he portrayed an Islamic terrorist who got on board a French train, he was holding an AK-47 rifle, a handgun, a box cutter, but the three Americans stopped him when his gun jammed. And the Hollywood elites are very upset because its terrorist was not portrayed sympathetically. So we have to be sympathetic to them. Perhaps H.R. McMaster is upset about that as well. This is the insanity that we truly have to fight. But then it is exacerbated by the drugs that we give. And then we have a top GOP donor says, "I will not write another check until Republican candidates support assault weapon bans." Good, good. Because the money you gave to Jeb Bush didn't help. We have a good man with a good message. Your money doesn't help as long as we have freedom to speak. That's what they want to shut down. That's what we'll be talking about when we come back. Stay with us. I'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to get to some amazing news that has come out about the Democrat mafia. That's right, money laundering, structuring of payments, murder, assassination, Arkansas. Yeah, eventually the truth will come out, and it is coming out now. We had an interesting tweet from President Obama yesterday about the $1.7 billion cash bribe that he paid to Iranians and the way that he did this and the fact that it was never investigated. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I want to take a look at free speech here, because as we look at this gun debate, we've got a Florida-based real estate developer. His name is Al Hoffman Jr., and he's decided that he is not going to write another check to the establishment GOP until they ban guns. This is a guy who's given money to Florida Governor Rick Scott, also big contributor to Jeb. And what did all that money get him that he gave Jeb? Because remember, Jeb was the guy that was going to win the election, according to the media. Because what the media does is they look at who's got the most money to spend, and then they put them as the front runner because they know that money's going to be spent with them, number one. Number two, that's always worked in the past. Didn't work this time because of the unique qualities of President Trump, but also because you had the freedom to read information about Hillary Clinton, about the other candidates. You had the ability to pass stories around and information that you read to other people. That's why they're so intent on stopping this. And they are very intent on stopping this. You know, we had said, and Matt Drudge came here and he said, be careful because they're going to, after this election, especially if Hillary Clinton wins, they're going to come after all of us and try to shut us down. InfoWars, The Drudge Report, Breitbart, Daily Caller, anybody in conservative news media, they're going to try to shut us down. And she didn't win, but that hasn't slowed down the Democrats. That's been their plan, and they have already had their people in place with the big de facto monopolies of Facebook, Twitter, Google, so forth, and they are still pressing on with that plan, even at the FCC and the FEC. This is the federal election campaign, and of course we had the FCC that wanted to get involved in newsrooms. Remember that? Looking very carefully at content of how do you create the news? Well, that's none of your business. You were set up to allocate spectrum because there was a limited amount of spectrum, and like any other kind of property, there was going to be some way to allocate that. And we can always talk about whether or not they did that in a good way, but nevertheless, it's kind of like a recorder of deeds. You know, you have an auction and you put this out, and the FCC was there to make sure that nobody trespassed over somebody else's property by exceeding the power bandwidth limits and other things like that. But content was nothing that they were supposed to get involved with. But they're getting involved with political content now. And the same thing with the Federal Elections Commission. Still coming after Drudge, still coming after conservative media. And but first of all, this guy, the top GOP donor, I will not write another check until GOP candidates support an assault weapons ban. Okay. All right. Well, we've got a video of a guy trying to define what an assault weapon is in his legislation. And I want to play that for you. But just think about the fact that this guy, and this is what's really bothering them. Jeb Bush had $150 million in his war chest. And it got him nothing. Got him nothing. It was one of the lowest vote totals out there. So it isn't just that President Trump had unique capabilities in terms of communicating with people, in terms of understanding the media and how to use it. I mean, he wasn't defeating other candidates in the large field either. He did pretty poorly. Came way, way, way down the pack. These other candidates who are out there, who got more traction than Jeb Bush by a great deal, didn't have as much money, but they were able to communicate with people. That's why it is so essential for them to shut it down. But as he talks about the assault weapons ban, let's play that clip where they're trying to define what an assault weapon is. I think it's a video that we've got. We'll go to that later when we've got the when we get into the gun stuff here. Let's continue on with the free speech stuff. We've got the FEC war on Drudge. The internet goes underground. They've been making these pronouncements very publicly, but now they have gone underground, according to one of the commissioners on the Federal Elections Commission. He says the Drudge Report and Fox and the sites, as well as the rest of conservative media, including filmmakers. I guess there are maybe one or two conservative filmmakers out there I haven't noticed in the last year or so. It's one of the reasons I haven't gone to a film for quite some time, because I'm quite frankly tired of being lectured on identity politics, and we'll get to that in just a moment as well. But this is what the commissioner, the FEC commissioner, Lee Goodman, said. So the debate has gone underground, but it has not ceased. He fought off the several attempts to stifle media like Fox, Drudge, and conservative media. So there's two different ways and two different organizations that the Democrats are still using. They have the FEC, which will come in and say, well, if you link two stories, if the Drudge Report is linking to conservative stories, then that is like a campaign contribution. So therefore, we're going to regulate that. That's the theory behind this, as absurd as it is, because we all know what newspapers have done for a very long time. They've always been very, very partisan. Even in recent times, they've been very, very partisan. It used to be, 100 years ago, you would have the Arkansas Democrat or the Illinois Republican or whatever. They would actually put the name of the party that they supported in the name of the paper. They were incredibly partisan. Then they came up with the idea that they would be a little bit more effective if they tried to pretend that they were totally objective and disinterested. And they were all pushing a single agenda of big government. And so they would say, we're totally objective. We don't have a dog in this fight. We don't have a political opinion. Now, that's pretty laughable now, isn't it? And I think it's pretty laughable for the FEC to say that they're going to try to label this stuff as political, because all speech is political. If you don't have a bias, if you say that you don't have a bias, you're lying to yourself and you're lying to other people. Because just the stories that you choose to report, like Drudge, Drudge doesn't write stories. He's like America's editor. He looks at the news and he decides which stories he thinks are interesting. And people go there because they agree with his pick on which stories are interesting. But he does have a conservative libertarian slant to his news. And when you look at the stories that are reported by the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, I mean, you seriously don't still believe that these guys are completely disinterested and objective. Absolutely not. And so the commissioner, Lee Goodman, says the debate has gone underground. It has not ceased. The desire to regulate Americans' political speech on the internet remains alive and well here at the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, and now even in Congress. Matt Drudge put out one of his rare tweets. He doesn't tweet too often, and when he does, he leaves it up for a while and then deletes it. He said, the media is haranguing people about what they can have, what they should do, how they should feel, and it has reached such absurd levels. It's all so far removed from simply reporting what is. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it is by design. And when we come back, we're going to tell you what the latest designs from Google are about. Because it's about making money for these corporations. They're always about making money. But it's also about a political agenda that they want to push. And just as we've seen with the NFL, they will put their finances on the back burner. Welcome back. We're just talking about the efforts to control speech, because as we see some of these establishment GOP donors saying, I'm not going to give any money to people unless they push for gun control. You know, people like Jeb Bush that he loves so much, because, you know, if we had somebody like Jeb Bush in, I'm sure that he would throw a bone to the people who are demanding some kind of an artificial solution here that isn't really going to be a solution. He would throw them some kind of a bone. But, of course, his money went nowhere anyway. Why? Because we had free speech. We had an internet that allowed people to search out the truth for themselves. They could get to multiple news outlets. They could get to the Drudge Report. They could get to InfoWars. They could get to Breitbart, Daily Caller, you name it. They didn't have to rely simply on the news that was curated and presented to them by people who have a globalist big government view, Operation Mockingbird, pushing the information that the government chose. I grew up in an environment like that. I had to work very hard to get opinions that were outside of what was being fed to me on ABC, CBS, NBC, NPR. I would go to magazines. I would find magazines that were opinion magazines because I wanted to get beyond the pablum that was being put out there. Everybody else, for the most part, was looking at it and saying, well, you know, they're all saying the same thing. They're all reporting the same stories. They're all saying the same things about the same story. So it must be true. No. No. The kind of information they were telling us that we're going to be out of oil by the mid-1980s. Pushing that agenda. Peak oil from the CIA and then the Time and Newsweek magazine pushing that information as well. No, it was obviously a lie. But so many people bought into that. It's amazing. And so now we've got Google flexing its muscle. They've got even more rules to demonetize other people and to make money for themselves. But understand, it's not simply about the money. Because these organizations, as we've seen in the past, will do things that are not in their financial interest in order to push their political agenda. Why? Why would they do that? Are they just altruistic? Are they just idealistic? No, because ultimately their power and their money comes from their preferential treatment by the government. As a matter of fact, these big monopolies that are set up, they were started by the CIA and Incatel, the venture capital fund, funneling money into these organizations. So they understand that they were created by the government, and whether or not you understand that or not, and they understand the government can bring up somebody to take them down or can take them down with regulations as well. So this week, Google rolled out new filtering policies for its Chrome browser. It will block all advertising on websites that serve particularly annoying ads. That's the way they're coming after it, saying, well, you know, we have determined that these types of ads are annoying. But of course, it's self-serving because the annoying ads are the ones that Google doesn't make any money off of. But the ones that are equally annoying that Google makes money off of, those aren't really a problem. So things like autoplay videos with sound or full page pop-ups. No. You do that and they're going to filter you out and they're going to block all advertising on your website to punish you. But they're also going to essentially delist you from searches because everybody uses them. And this is their monopoly. They dominate the online ad business, and they want to monopolize those ads even farther. Several members of the Coalition of Better Ads told the Wall Street Journal they felt that Google had undue influence over the committee's actions. You think? Because it spearheaded the research used to determine the intrusive ad types. So just as we see with Big Pharma, they produce the studies. And then they fund the studies, and they get the results that they want. So Google puts together this group and says, well, we have determined that certain types of ads are offensive, but others aren't. For example, YouTube's pre-roll video ads, which you've all seen, were not included as being intrusive or or bothersome. So there you go. Anything that Google does is fine. But if they don't make money off of it, they're going to shut that down. And then we see the virtue signaling and the identity politics coming into the Republican Party now. We've got a congresswoman, Representative Alina Ross Leightonen, who is not going to be running again because she knows she's not going to win. Why? Because she's a leftist Republican. She works on identity politics, but she's lecturing the GOP that even though she can't win, she's telling the GOP they've got to become more like her in order to win. We got to become like the Democrats. She said the GOP yesterday, she said the GOP is heading into trouble and the future looks grim unless the party can attract more millennials, more women, more minorities. Yeah, you know, do that identity politics thing and divide the country up by demographics like the Democrat Party has always been doing. Divide and conquer. And this is my demographic group and that's your demographic group. You know, people are really getting tired of this. We had Bill Murray come out last week and talk about this. It's like, why are the Democrats doing this? Why are they selecting one group and say, we're going to do everything for you, and we're going to shut down everything for everybody else, even if that group is not even American citizens? They pick a demographic, and then they champion it to the exclusion of everybody else. And Bill Murray said, why can't we just have a government that says we're going to do things for all the people, we're going to treat all the people equally? See, that's the identity politics of the left, of the Democrat Party, that's destroying them. They lost 1,000 seats under Obama and his identity politics. They lost with Hillary Clinton under that. But of course, this GOP woman says that that's what we need. We need more. We need to focus on age demographics, on sex, and on race in order to win. No, that's the pattern of the Democrats. And that would be suicide for the GOP. The Democrats already own that tactic and strategy. They've already pandered to all these different groups, so they're not going to listen to the GOP. And we don't want to have that in our country anyway. People are tired of that. People, even in these demographic groups, after they see this happening for a while, they realize we want a system that is going to do things for everybody. So instead of constantly reinforcing a victim mindset on the black community, for example, let's do things that are going to help them to succeed by getting rid of regulations and taxes. That helps everybody. And that is the tactic that President Trump has done. But they're now still working on black voter registration at the Black Panther screenings. We have a new organization called the Electoral Justice Project. It's an offshoot of the Black Lives Matter people. And they have a hashtag Wakanda the Vote campaign. And they're dressing up like characters in the movie and going to movie theaters and registering people to vote, presumably not registering them to vote in Wakanda. But that would be a great troll to show up and to have a voter registration thing for them to vote in Wakanda. Maybe they wouldn't know the difference because these are going to be low information voters that are so disinterested that the only way you're going to get them to register to vote is to meet them at a movie theater. Maybe we don't want those kind of people voting if that's all that they know is the carefully crafted identity politics that they get in a movie that gets them motivated to vote. If that's the only information these voters have, then I don't think we should encourage them to vote. They said, this weekend, we wanted to meet our people in Wakanda. We know that for some, it is a superhero world, but for them, it's real. But we know that the world we deserve is still waiting to be built, and we want to build it. Let me tell you what the Democrats can do. It's very simple. Why don't they meet people where they are? Another example, again, economics, for example. This is a story from Breitbart. Democrats want to ban high-interest consumer loans. Now, if they actually started doing stuff like this, they could revive the Democrat Party instead of playing their identity politics. Because who are these payday loans really hitting? Low-income people? A lot of black people? But no. They want to foster this Marxism. They want to foster racism. And it's a losing strategy. But they could do something to actually help people. They wanted to, the California Democrats have filed a bill that would cap annual interest rates at 19%. Isn't that enough when they pay virtually zero to get the money? You know, we saw this explode as they took away the usury laws because of the explosion in interest rates in the Carter administration. But I think it's an absolute crime. They said over half the lending in California is at an interest rate that is over 100% a year. Can you imagine that? Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to get back to the guns, and I want to take a look at what the students are telling us has to be done. Because, you know, we should all listen to our high school students. They know best. And to our comedians. We've got a video here of Chris Rock saying, I want to live in a world where an equal amount of white kids are shot every month. Remember when comedy used to be funny instead of racist, instead of political, instead of pushing violence and hatred? Wouldn't that be nice to go back to the days when you actually had funny comedians instead of the hacks that we now have on late night comedy and elsewhere? Chris Rock, he should be ashamed of himself, and I'll tell you why in just a moment if you don't already know. But first, some of the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what supports this program. We have a couple of big sales there at InfoWarsStore.com. Cellforce, 50% off. The Real Red Pill, 50% off. We have our newest product, Icarin, available at 50% off. And it's a great way to protect your liver, your kidneys, to detoxify your body. And it uses a powerful formula that is fueled by milk thistle extract and other natural things that are not dangerous for you. That's what we do here. Good quality stuff that is not like pharmaceutical drugs. So it's a great way to support your liver, kidneys, and detoxify your body. That's Icarin, available at 50% off. Also, we have an InfoWars Life Daily Digestive Pack, a great way to get probiotics as well as digestive aids. Carnivore, a digestive aid that makes it easier for you to digest certain things like meat, for example, that you might be having problems digesting. And we want you to eat meat. It's good for you. So we've got carnivore as well as FloorLife. FloorLife, of course, is probiotics. Those two together at an unprecedented 50% off. Take a look at the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. That's why we run these sales periodically. All right, getting back to what I was just talking about, if the Democrats really wanted to win elections, instead of pushing identity politics, instead of pushing division, instead of pushing racism, they would do something for the people, for all the people. And this has been a real sticking point with me, because I remember what it used to be like before we took off the usury laws that would prevent banks and others from charging more than 10% interest. And what happened was the economy collapsed under Jimmy Carter. And we started having runaway inflation. And we had inflation that was going higher than 10%, so they had to take off that cap. But when they took off the cap, what we have now seen over the last 30 years is that that cap just keeps going up. Even when the Federal Reserve takes the interest rates down to zero, what do we have? We've got credit card rates that are 20, 30, 40, 50%. You know that exists, right? I think it is absolutely criminal that we allow these types of usury to exist, that they can get money for 0% from the Fed or a fraction of a percent from the Fed, and then they can charge 4 or 5% for a home loan. They can charge credit card rates that are in the mid-20s, 30s. I said to my wife, if I ever wanted to run for office, that would be my core issue, to shut down these criminal banks. We used to call people that did that loan sharks. And it only happened with organized crime coming through people that were absolutely desperate, loaning them money and then jacking the interest rate up so high they could never get out of debt. So what's happening in California? The California legislature ended interest rate limitations for small loans above $2,500 in the 1980s, following the disasters, the economic disasters of Jimmy Carter. And now they say there's an estimated $1.5 billion in unbankable intermediate-term loans that are issued to state residents, with over half of the lending at an annual interest rate of over 100%. 100%. Even the mafia didn't do that. But, of course, the mafia isn't as ruthless and as greedy as the bankers are. The idea that they would be able to get money for 0%, isn't it enough that they've got a fractional reserve system where they can create money out of nowhere, they can multiply their wealth? No, it's never enough. Never enough. Just as they asked John D. Rockefeller, you know, how much money is enough? And he said, well, just a little bit more. See, greed is never satisfied. Greed is not good. I disagree with the Ayn Rand libertarians on that. I understand that true competition in a real free market where the government doesn't have its thumb on the scale for its friends who bribe them, if we have that kind of a situation, and wherever we do, it's in every business's interest to offer better services, better products at a better price for other people, and that kind of self-interest does serve the general interest of everybody in a pure free market situation. But we don't have anything close to that now. We have crony capitalism. And so when we look at the greed of these individuals, it is never enough, and nobody is greedier than the banks, which brings us, I want to finish up this segment here on banking, which brings us to the competition between banks and cryptocurrencies, which I find to be kind of interesting and informative, isn't it? We have Switzerland now embracing Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies while there is a global crackdown. And we've had other countries and jurisdictions do that as well. And the banks are very threatened by this, because this truly is a competition to the banks. And I understand the whole thing about cash. I know that paper money gives us the ability to buy and sell things anonymously. And it also can be a very valuable tool in terms of budgeting and so forth. I, I agree with the idea of money, but money that is not backed by anything, money that can be manipulated by the Federal Reserve, money that is not honest, is not a good store of money. And as we move forward, the push for paperless society is gathering steam, and it is going to eventually happen one way or the other. The question is, will we have forms of paperless money that will protect our privacy as well or better than we did with the fiat currencies that are produced by our banking system? And that's the true issue, and whether or not these cryptocurrencies can be developed that will be a more honest store of value because they'll be reacting to market forces rather than the arbitrary fiats of a privately held central bank that manipulates the market for its own interest. So there's a story from Zero Hedge. Here's why banks hate cryptocurrencies. They said banks like to pretend that they're so much more established and secure than the world of cryptocurrencies, but as anybody who pays close attention to the headlines would know, that's simply not the case, is it? They talk about the fact that they like the blockchain, but then they cite the volatility and the fact that you can launder money. We'll talk about laundering money here in just a moment and Obama and the Clintons. But, yeah, the banks aren't involved in that, are they? Oh, no, no. I mean, just look at HSBC, the multiple convictions that they've had for money laundering. And, of course, that's why James Comey was on the board of directors, because that's where else would you expect somebody like him to be? This virtue-signaling crook. But on the board of directors of the bank that has the most convictions for financial crimes of anybody. But they feel threatened. So the real answer as to why they're coming after the cryptocurrencies isn't because they're trying to protect you from fraud. No, they feel threatened by this. And there's an interesting chart on this article. Take a look. Show the chart that they've got there. They've got JP Morgan and the whole cryptocurrency, and they're about the same size. $395 billion for JP Morgan Chase and $470 for the crypto market in terms of market cap. And then you look at the next tier down. You got the Bank of China is about has about the same market cap here, resources as Bitcoin. Goldman Sachs, about the same as Ripple. Morgan Stanley, about the same as Ethereum. You get the idea? They are looking at this and saying, wait a minute, we don't control this. And these guys are about as big as we are. So with JP Morgan, about the size of Bitcoin and or the crypto market, and Bitcoin about the size of the Bank of China, they're trying to slow the pace of crypto growth, and they're doing it by trash talking. They're doing it by prohibition. It isn't going to work. It isn't going to work. Even the banks don't really know what they want, says Zero Hedge. After JP Morgan's CEO, Jamie Dimon, remember that last year? He said, Bitcoin is a fraud and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Now they have put out a report that says Bitcoin-based ETFs are the holy grail for owners and investors. So they're kind of conflicted, aren't they? There's some money on the table. They can't quite control themselves. Meanwhile, we got the Polish central bank secretly funding an anti-crypto YouTube propaganda video. They got a kid. He says, oh, I lost all of my money. I can't do anything. And, they got a climax in the video where he goes to a restaurant and he can't pay for his date's meal with his new crypto investment. And so she throws on it down some cryptocurrency. Well, it turns out that was funded by the Bank of Poland. Nevertheless, Poland has announced that they are going to trade with Venezuela as Venezuela has created their new cryptocurrency. Poland says, yeah, we'll trade real goods for that. We'll trade you food and medicine for the new petro cryptocurrency. That's the hypocrisy that we're seeing. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about some crimes of Obama and the Clintons that have been exposed. An Arkansas has come back to haunt the Clintons as a whistleblower, a professional wrestler, has now admitted in a role in some murders that happened in Arkansas. And Obama has his ransom that he said was not a ransom, not kidnapping money. But the way that he did it was not just bad policy, but it was also a violation of U.S. law in terms of money laundering and structured deposits and withdrawals that he sent. 13 different payments, just under magic number that they have out there. So we're going to be taking a look at that as it comes up. But also we have the Dreamer dispute still going. They didn't come up with any law. But as we're talking about this ransom of hostages from Iran that was paid by Obama, we all understand why you don't pay ransom for hostages, right? Even if you can do it, and even if it is a good thing, and it is a good thing to get these hostages out. But when you do that, you have set up a precedent that is actually going to encourage more kidnappings, isn't it? That's what we all understand. That's why we don't deal with terrorists. That's why people don't like that foreign policy, although they still will do it from time to time. But when we look at the Dreamer situation, it's the same thing in practice. Remember, it was Hillary Clinton who was to the right of where the Republicans are right now, because we've got Jeff Sessions saying the DACA deal is the last real opportunity to enact immigration agenda that serves the national interest. You don't serve the national interest by destroying the concept of law and of borders. And as Attorney General, Jeff Sessions should know better. Jeff Sessions was always a hardliner on immigration, but I guess that was really only Stephen Miller talking through him. Maybe he didn't really believe that. Because if he really believed that, then he would not hold this nation hostage and ransom, because that's what's really being done here. Telling people, if you come here, we'll adopt you, we'll become the world's orphanage, as Mo Brooks pointed out. We'll become the world's orphanage, and we'll give you a free education, we'll raise your kids for free, and we won't worry about how much that's going to cost. Because, you know, we've got the petrodollar, we're the world's reserve currency, and we can just continue to borrow, and everybody will finance our debt eternally. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And if we get people who come here in defiance of our laws, if we give them the right to vote, if we run them through these schools, I mean, the problem is it's just going to accelerate what is already happening as Americans put their own kids in these schools that have a Marxist Brave New World agenda. It's only going to accelerate it, because these kids that are coming here, they're going to be indoctrinated into all that. It's just going to speed up the process, just as we had Cloward and Piven say, we've got to collapse America. And the way to do that is to bring in a lot of people and put them on the welfare rolls, because then we can collapse it even quicker. And we can do that with the education system. That has a dual purpose. It collapses us financially, and it collapses us with what is being taught to the people who are brought in here. So I don't really know where they're going to go with this. They've got the Supreme Court on Friday discussing in private whether or not they will listen to, they'll handle Trump's appeal of a judge's decision to block his plan to enforce the law. Why is a court involved in this? I mean, that's what we're talking about. Again, DACA was not a law. It was not a program. It was a memo from Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano saying, I'm not going to enforce the law. So why can't Trump say, my Homeland Security is going to enforce the law? Why do we have two judges involved in this? As a matter of fact, the latest one didn't really even cite any law or anything about the fact that President Trump was going to start enforcing the law. Instead said, I don't like his tweets. I think he's got impure motives. That didn't have anything to do with it. That's not a question for the Supreme Court to decide. That's not a question for judges in California and New York to decide. The law is the law, and the Attorney General ought to realize that as well. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to play a clip for you from Chris Rock. He says, I want to live in a world where an equal amount of white kids are shot every month. Oh, that's funny, is it? That's what we're seeing from the people who can see nothing but color. We're going to play that clip, and then I'll comment on this. Here's a clip of Chris Rock.
I mean, honestly, I want to live in a world with real equality. I want to live in
live in a world where an equal amount of white kids are shot every month. An equal world. I want to see white mothers on TV crying.
Well, he just might get that, you know? You push that kind of hatred and racism, you just might get that. Because we've already had a lot of people sucker punched and seriously injured from behind by black youths who are doing that simply because they see a white person, a white elderly person, just come up behind them and whack them. We've seen black people shooting cops simply because they're wearing a blue uniform. That doesn't even get to the skin color. Oh, we'll stop at the uniform. They got a blue uniform on, shoot them. We don't care who this guy is. We don't care what he's done. You're angry about something somebody else has done somewhere else, so just find the nearest cop you can and shoot him. And this is the Florida victims that we've got up here on here. So we're going to portray the Florida victims, and certainly, that is something that everybody is concerned about. But, you know, the Florida victims, as you can see, many of them are white, right? That's why they put that up there. So you can see that they're not all black people. But he's talking about police violence. And he is totally detached from reality. Take a couple of the cases, for example, that we've had. He pretends that there are not any white people that are being killed. And we can argue whether it is a greater percentage of the black community, and it is, or whether it is a greater number of white students that are killed, and that's correct as well. So that's a way we can use statistics to push our point of view. But let's just take the situation in Minneapolis, for example. We had Philando Castile, and you've seen the video footage of the black guy who was pulled over. They didn't like the way that his car looked, so they were continually pulling him over and harassing him in the car, but he also had a concealed carry permit, and we all saw the pictures of him shot there. And later on, we saw a black Somali cop. They're very proud. It was their very first Somali cop that they had in Minneapolis. Evidently, they didn't train him too well, because you had a white woman from Australia who was about to get married to an American here. She thought she heard something. She called the police, and when she goes to talk to them, this officer shoots her, kills her, because he was afraid. And so you got a white woman shot by a black police officer. You got a black man who was shot, and it's all recorded on film, by a white cop. I think he's a white cop. Nevertheless, shot by a cop in Minneapolis. And what did we see after that? We saw people marching there and saying, we've got to do something about how the police are trained, about how we hold them accountable. We need to have more control. That's the real solution. And they had relatives from both of these situations, white and black, marching together to try to get control over this situation with the police. That is really what needs to happen. But people like Chris Rock don't want to see that happen. Every time they come in and talk about one of these police shootings, they always pick one that is that they can use to gin up racial division. And even shortly after, when you see that the police shooting people without enough reason extends to white people as well, they don't want to talk about that. That's not a situation they want to talk about. They want to pretend that it is one group against another, because that's really the way these guys roll. Same thing that happened with Laura Ingraham. She pushes back against these professional basketball players who are trash-talking President Trump. And as she pointed out, she had written a number of years ago a book called Shut Up and Sing. And when she calls out stupid things that people say, that celebrities, she'll throw that in there, shut up and do something else, you know, that is tied to what profession they were in. So she said to them, shut up and dribble. And they said, that's racist. Because they don't want to argue any facts. They don't want to have a discussion or debate. They don't see anything but race. That's the very definition, folks, of racism. People who, whenever you try to engage them in any conversation, all they do is scream racist, sexist, homophobe, or whatever. They got a one-word response to anything. They're like little wind-up dolls. And you pull the string, and one word comes out at a time. Racist, sexist, homophobe, xenophobe, whatever. That's the way these kids respond. And so, in light of that, I guess we're now going to have the students, the high school students, nevertheless, not even college students, who've been propagandized a little bit more usually, but it's gotten pretty bad in the high school. So now we're going to have the high school students are going to lecture us about how we need to modify our society. And the really scary thing about this is these kids are going to be modifying society in a few years. But here's mainstream media, very, very happy that they've got angry students who are going to lecture us about what we should do.
Were raw emotions through impassioned speeches at a gun control rally this weekend in response to the violence. One of the loudest voices, Emma Gonzalez.
But if us students have learned anything, it's that if you don't study, you will fail. And in this case, if you actively do nothing, people continually end up dead.
We are the people who are going to make ourselves heard the most because we're the people who have the opportunity to do that.
This morning, the Trump administration promises to focus on school safety.
He will make the safety of our nation's schools our top administration priority.
We've seen this routine before. Both sides dig in on their arguments for guns and against guns. Politicians say the right things about thoughts and prayers in the moment, but Nothing really changes on the federal level.
Well,
forget
Chuck
my
Todd's
skepticism, but why would anything change
get
now?
Get rid of the Second Amendment.
Look, legislatively, probably nothing will change as long as you have the sort of the orientation that you have right now with Republicans in charge of the House and Senate and a president who very much doesn't appear to have any interest in new gun laws. But the student activism here is something that's different. And I know that I've had people say to me, if 20 first graders getting mowed down doesn't change things, why will anything change? But the student activism here does feel different. We've not had this before after one of these shootings. These students aren't just mourning, they're angry.
So that is the angle that the mainstream media is going to push, and we're going to hear that incessantly. We're going to hear these useful idiots, as Lenin called these types of people. The students who have no experience, who won't learn from other people's experience. We call that history. They don't teach that. They're not going to understand why we have a Second Amendment. And you're going to hear Chuck Todd here in a clip that I've got coming up, talking about how and why we've got to get rid of the Second Amendment. We've got another guy who is trying to define what an assault weapon is, but they don't want to know. See, they don't have any solution. They don't want to look at what the problem is. Instead, they have a pre-programmed agenda that they want to push through. And so when you try to talk to them and they just respond as racist, 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 because you are Republican or you support Trump, therefore you're a racist. To them, all of this gun violence is all these shootings and everything is simply about the gun. It's about nothing else. And they think that if the gun goes away, we're not going to have any violence. Of course, the gun isn't going to go away any more than drugs are going to go away. You know, it's profoundly, it's just amazingly ignorant that these same people who are filling up the streets and they think that Trump is Hitler and their solution is give the guns to Hitler. That's what they're saying. In the same way that you got the people who are saying that Trump is Stalin. Oh, well, let's let the government that is run by Trump, let's let them spy on everybody. Let's let this continue. And so this is a group of people who don't know anything about history. Student survivors are slamming Trump over the FBI tweets. How dare you blame us? We did report him. We tried. Well, who'd you report him to? Oh, that's right. That government that you're going to give a monopoly of force to. And we have a teacher who actually talks some sense. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. David Knight, talk to a former sheriff, somebody who has walked the walk, has stood up for the Second Amendment at the all the way to the Supreme Court and won. And he is now running for Congress in Arizona. We're talking about Sheriff Richard Mack. If you want to follow his campaign, help him, you can find him. His website is sheriffrichardmack.com, and you can also find him on Twitter at Sheriff Mack. And just to give you a little bit of background, he was in Arizona, Graham County, Arizona, He was a sheriff there. He was nationally recognized for his participation in a landmark 1997 case, Mack versus United States. It was a group of county sheriffs who challenged constitutionality of provisions in the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act, because there is a separation of powers. If we don't have people in Washington who really recognize that at the moment, that's why we need more people who do. And so now joining us is Sheriff Richard Mack. Thank you for joining us, Sheriff Mack.
Well, David, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be back with you. It's like coming home after a while, I guess. We haven't seen you in a while, but thank you so much.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's going on in your run for Congress right now, and then I want to ask you some questions about the current gun debate. You can speak to the people as to why the Second Amendment is important, why local law enforcement is important, because we keep seeing every problem being pushed to the national level, and that includes law enforcement. But tell us a little bit about your congressional campaign right now. What stage are you in?
Well, first of all, a lot of you may have seen the scandals that were going on in the country. One of our congressmen here, I thought one of the better ones, Trent Franks, abruptly resigned. And the president, the governor called a special election here in the state, and it's 1 week from tomorrow. We've had a very short window to get prepared for this campaign. But the reason that I really have a chance to win this is because there's so many mainstream candidates running. There's four different legislators or former legislators from the state of Arizona, and they're all pretty much mainstream establishment candidates. And so it really is an opportunity for somebody as conservative and constitutional as I am to win this.
Yes, usually kind of the other way around. Usually there's like one mainstream guy that they handpick and groom because, right, you know, this is a special election. So that kind of flip things upside down. So usually there's one guy that's the establishment guy, and then all the constitutionalists, the libertarians, conservatives all run and divide the rest of the vote. So that guy always wins. But now we got an opportunity going the other way around.
It is. And if I was just running against one of them or two of them, I don't really believe I'd have much of a chance. But because there's four and then there's 12 people on the ballot, there's really five people that have a chance to win, the four mainstreamers and myself. And the thing of it is that I said all along, if I could raise some money and compete with them financially and get the TV ads and the radio ads, And the signs and bumper stickers and everything else that you need to run a campaign. We've really had a lot of good volunteers, too. If it hadn't been for the volunteers, I wouldn't have got enough signatures. Here in Arizona, you have to have signatures, and we got over 2,000, which put us in second place of the 12 candidates.
Wow.
And so we do have a lot going on for us, but I will tell you, this last week, we're trying to saturate the airwaves with radio ads to really wake people up to the situation that we're faced with here in Arizona and in our country. And there's one of the mainstream candidates that has tried to steal my thunder. Her name's Lesko. And she actually has on all of her signs all over the place. She has over 1,000 signs up. And she calls herself a constitutional conservative. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's just political choreography on her part, trying to convince people, and especially the conservatives and the Tea Party groups in this district, because it is a very conservative district. And she's trying to convince them that she's actually constitutional. Well, she spent about 10 years in the state legislature, and you can't point at one thing that was really constitutional. I'm sure she was for the Second Amendment, and she claims to be that, and she never voted for gun control. But still, she wouldn't know the Constitution if it hit her in the head, but yes, she's campaigning on that.
Well, you certainly do, and you have gone all the way to the Supreme Court to defend and to win, defending both the Second Amendment and the Tenth Amendment, because that's a big part of why you went there, to say we have to have local law enforcement. It's very important to have local law enforcement, and it's also very important to have the Second Amendment as well.
Of course, and let me add something right there. You're right on target. You know, you ask me why I run. People have been asking me that. It's the same reason I filed a lawsuit against the Clinton administration back 20 years ago. I'm running for the same reason, liberty. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I just got an endorsement about 10 days ago from the RLC, That's the Republican Liberty Caucus.
Yeah,
and David,
good.
they have one criteria for endorsing a candidate. And out of the 12, I got their endorsement. Their criteria, do you have a record, a solid track record for standing for liberty and the Constitution? Not a promise, not political jive.
That's right.
A track record, something that's tangible and viewable and palpable. And that's why I got it. And it's been a huge boost to my campaign.
Well, that's great. You certainly have walked the walk, and you certainly have fought, and that's why I want to have you on, because a lot of people have forgotten what happened 20 years ago. They've forgotten the real threat to the Second Amendment, but that's coming up again. And you fought that with other sheriffs. You took it all the way to the Supreme Court. You won at that point in time. But talk to us a little bit about how you view the current gun debate post the shooting in Parkland, Florida.
Well, this happens every shooting, and I think we've got to ask ourselves why these shootings are occurring. And to be so simplistic and to blame guns is really nonsense. I mean, there's only two ways to go here. You can have complete gun confiscation, because this whole thing about getting rid of the mean guns, let's get rid of the AR-15s. Okay, so next time the lunatic thug loner who shoots up a school or kills at a school and commits these heinous murders, then he's going to use nice guns.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you get shot with a nice gun or a mean gun, it's still going to cause death and mayhem. And it is such a ridiculous argument. And so the only other alternative is, if we can't get rid of 350 million guns in America, which is logistically impossible, it's not going to happen. Even if it was lawful, which it is not, it's not going to happen. And so people finding solace and comfort in the idea of creating more gun control is just idiotic. It's not going to happen.
Well, it's the same thing that we've seen on the right in terms of drugs. You know, we understand how drugs have destroyed lives and everything, so let's just make them go away by prohibiting them. And, of course, that didn't work. And the same thing isn't going to work for the same reasons with guns. We're going to have it's going to be totally ineffective, but it will increase crime. It will increase the lethality of these weapons, and we have seen that from experience. So we've got to take a quick break, Sheriff Mack. We're going to be right back. We're talking to Sheriff Mack. You can find him, SheriffRichardMack.com. Very important to support candidates who stand for the Constitution and really have done it. Not just swearing in ceremonies, but really supporting the Constitution with their actions, as Sheriff Mack did. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sheriff Mack. We have a rare opportunity where a special election has created a quick special election opportunity has created a situation where we've got a large field that is divided by establishment candidates, and it gives us an opportunity for a real constitutionalist, somebody who has fought for the Constitution, somebody who is a libertarian, a chance to come in. And as Sheriff Mack pointed out in the last segment, he's been given the endorsement by the Republican Liberty Caucus because he has actually done things to defend the Constitution, not just say that he will uphold the Constitution, as everybody does when they take the oath of office. That's easy enough to do. But he has actually walked the walk. He pushed back against the Clintons, against the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. He fought it all the way to the Supreme Court to defend the Second Amendment, the Tenth Amendment, and now he is running for Congress, and this election is very close. Sheriff Mack, tell people where they can go to support your campaign in these final days here.
Yes, really could use all the support there. It's all going to go into our radio ads last week. Again, the election is February 27th, 1 week from tomorrow. So we're really going to push this, and I'm hoping everybody will get behind me and help make this last week's push. So we really need your financial support big time. And it's all, you can do it all right at SheriffRichardMack.com.
All right, great. They can go there.
SheriffRichardMack.com.
All right, great. And again, your Twitter handle is Sheriff Mack. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to give him the Twitter handle, but go ahead. I'll give the floor to you.
Well, one other point I wanted to make is I'm actually a school teacher. I don't know if you and Alex know that, but I teach high
school. I didn't know that.
I teach government and constitution government and criminal justice. And the thing that they teach us to do if there's a drill, when we do our drills for an emergency situation, they teach us to pile up all the kids in the corner. And
that's and effective.
I know. And so, some of the kids really are against that. They said, well, you're just making us targets and an easy mm-hmm. shot. And so the point that I was making about we can't get rid of 350 million guns, well, on the other hand, let's follow some common sense and let's shoot back when this happens.
Sheriff, yes.
Grady Judd from Florida actually said that we should get former law enforcement, such as myself, and we have former military in our school also, who is actually better trained than I am. And we have other people that are really into guns and training and would be wonderful in defending our school, because Sheriff Judd said told the truth, and I'm going to tell the truth also. The average response time is 5 to 10 minutes for police officers to arrive at such situations that just happened in Florida. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can be murdered in 5 minutes, and I mean hundreds can be murdered mm-hmm. in 5 minutes. Luckily, we've kept it down, but usually it's just because the guy, the shooter, the thug, the murderer is reloading or, you know, had some other complications with his weapon. You know, this is something that all the schools in this country, governments, sheriffs, have got to start to address. And I applaud Sheriff Judd, who's one of our good constitutional sheriffs down there in Florida. Fantastic
yes, yes.
way to go.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his comments here. Polk yeah. County Sheriff Grady Judd. And he yeah. said, this particular shooting in Broward County only took 3 minutes. And he contrasts that, as you just pointed out, to the typical response of police, 5 to 10 minutes. So right. it's typically finished at that point. That's what we saw with the Texas church shooting here.
Right.
They got there as quickly as they could, but it was a guy on the ground. I have all these people writing back to me, oh, that didn't happen. He didn't stop the shooting. Yes, he did. Yes, he did stop the shooting. And but they cannot have a narrative go out where you have a responsible person who is a former NRA instructor, a person having yeah. the same gun as the killer, stopping the shooting. That cannot be allowed to have that narrative out there. But I want to ask you, so with the gun-free zone laws that were put in by Senator Joe Biden, you then are not allowed to carry a weapon in the school. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah,
that's a great idea. Great.
We've got to work to get that changed, and yeah. and maybe the schools or maybe Arizona could nullify that idiocy from Biden and just start arming our schools. And let's let all these thugs know, if you come into our school, somebody's going to shoot back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's more effective. I mean, here's a situation where you're teaching school, a former sheriff, and as you point out, former members of the military, highly trained individuals. Yeah. You could all be vetted by people who say, yeah, we're constantly looking at these people, and we still know that they're solid and mentally sound and so forth and highly trained, and we let them have these weapons, and then you're not going to be a target for a particular shooter who comes in because they're not going to know who's got the guns. So they're right. not going to see somebody in a uniform. They take that person out, and now you're back to a situation where there's nobody there to protect the crowd. It's very important to do that. And, of course, we've also had Sheriff David Clark say the same thing. He said, look, we'll yeah. get there as soon as we can, but it's your duty to arm yourself and to figure out, to train yourself how to protect yourself and your family until the police can get there, to at least delay situations to protect some innocent lives, even if they can get the first shots off.
Exactly. And let's also give a shout out to the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. I teach the children in my school, and I've told them I will never lie to them. I've told the people in this election I will never lie. And so the truth of the matter is the Second Amendment guarantees that your right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And it means this: gun control in the United States of America is against the law. And it doesn't matter what kind of statistics you can show that they're about gun violence. The law is the law, and it's there for a reason. And I totally support the law, and it allows for the American citizen to feel comfortable that government's only role regarding my right to keep and bear arms is to guarantee that my right,
right
is never infringed. That's their only role in this, and
because
people are
forgetting
that.
That's right, because it is their only role is to protect our rights and our liberties, and that's a God-given right that is recognized in the Constitution. But of course, as we see yesterday, you know, we had a had an attack. It was a Muslim against people at a Christian church in Russia. Nobody talked about that. Had five women killed. He was stopped by individuals with guns who took out that guy. But we have to have the narrative that only in America do we have guns, and so only in America do we have innocent people shot. And it, at the same time yesterday, we've got Turkey summoning the Dutch diplomat over the fact that the Netherlands were going to have a statement about the Armenian genocide. And what we don't have in this country, and certainly haven't had as of yet, is a genocide like we've seen in Hitler's Germany or Stalin's Russia or Mao's China or in the Turkish situation, because that's a key part of why we have the Second Amendment. We want to be able to protect ourselves against lunatics as well as against lunatics in government, lunatic tyrants. That's the real means of the defense against that is the Second Amendment.
It is, and thank goodness that we do have it. And there's another key principle there. We, the people, call the shots. We bestow all power. If we don't have the right to keep and bear arms, we cannot bestow that upon government officials. And so the key component of all of that, I'll finish with what I require my students to memorize. And it's these 10 words, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And so every one of my students have to say that for the final. They have to write that down or they have to quote it to me as part of the oral examination on our finals. And I think every American needs to get back to these basic fundamentals and stop finding ways to compromise or negate or nullify our Constitution. Even if they got rid of the Second Amendment, I still have a right to keep and bear arms because I was born with that right. No man can take that right away from me.
That's right. As they go on to say in the Declaration of Independence that you're quoting, if the government becomes destructive of these rights, then it is the right and the duty of the people to alter or abolish that government. So we hope that we can alter it so that it respects our rights. We're going to be back. We've got one more segment with Sheriff Mack. We've got to take a quick break here. And again, it's very imperative that you support Sheriff Mack. He's got a special election that is coming up just 1 week from tomorrow. It's an opportunity because with this special election coming up very rapidly, the establishment didn't have time to push everybody out except for one candidate. So it's kind of the opposite of what we typically see in an election. We've got a divided field with the establishment, and we've got one constitutional candidate, one person who's going to support individual liberty, and that's Sheriff Mack. So we'll be right back. SheriffRichardMack.com. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sheriff Mack. I didn't realize that he was in a special election, and it's just a week from tomorrow. This is a great opportunity because it is a heavily divided field, divided amongst establishment candidates. Sheriff Mack is the Republican Liberty Caucus candidate in that special election because he not only says he supports the Constitution, he has supported the Constitution. 20 years ago, he went all the way to the Supreme Court, fought and won to support the Second Amendment and the 10th Amendment against President Clinton's Brady Handgun Act. And so now we have a chance to send him to the Congress. You think we ought to have somebody like that in Congress? I do. So we're going to ask him in this next segment. We got one more with him. I want to ask him what other issues besides the Second Amendment, because we've been talking about that. That's at the front of everybody's mind right now after this shooting. But I want to talk to him about what other priorities he has there real quick. I want to let you know about a couple of the product sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because that's what supports this program. We have all of our Super Blue products 50% off. And again, that's our toothpaste, mouthwash, no fluoride, but it has iodine as well as silver. So that fights the bacteria that creates gum disease, that leads to tooth loss, it creates heart disease and so forth. You can find all the Super Blue products 50% off. Also, Pollen Block, a fast-acting seasonal distress support, help you fight back against pollen and take control of your sinuses. You can find that at 50% off. Take a look at the other sales we have. We've got a lot of sales of items that are up to 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com, and we really do appreciate your support. All right, let's go back to Sheriff Mack. Sheriff, Tell us some of the other issues besides the Second Amendment that is on your radar, some specifics that you're campaigning on.
Well, specifically, it's the freedom issues, but it's one of the government abuse that keeps happening in our country. The innocence in prison, the Bundy situation.
Yes.
That these people were kidnapped and taken away from their families for 2 years from some evil judges. And who's talking about making sure that never happens again? Mm-hmm. No one except me.
In fact,
no one across the country that has anything to do with running for any office is talking about that.
Isn't that interesting how silent they've been about that process when it parallels what's going on against the president right now? And we still have like Ross Ulbricht. It was a different issue. It wasn't land use issues, but it was being able to buy things anonymously on the Internet. So he was sent multiple life sentences. The parallels to the Bundy case are absolutely amazing, except that there wasn't a whistleblower like there was in the Bundy case. And they got away with it in his case, Ross Ulbricht and Silk Road.
Well, they almost got away with it. With the Bundys,
except yes.
It became so blatant and obvious that Judge Navarro had to change her tune. She was acting like a prosecutor until this all came to light. And then she threw the prosecutors under the bus and threw the case out, which should have happened a long time ago. She knew this information before. In fact, she was siding with the prosecutors with all of their, quote, prosecutorial misconduct.
Was she not only in that case, but in the previous two trials of some of the other people that were there at the Bundy standoff, they'd already had two other trials. A couple of people have been convicted of some charges. Those need to be overturned. Those people need to be released. But you're correct. In two trials previous and in this trial, up until the point we got Larry Wooten of the BLM, until that surfaced and he blew the whistle on that corruption, then she couldn't do anything about it. She was either going to go down with them or throw them under the bus.
And the CSPOA, my Constitutional Sheriff's Organization, actually put up a new website about all of this, and it's called thefreedomcoalition.com. And it's something we've been working on for over a year and a half now. Amish farmer Sam Girard, who's been put in prison for 6 years because he made a salve out of chickweed. And the judge, I went to his sentencing, and the judge said that he was too obstinate, so he's given him 6 years. And he didn't register with the FDA, so he gets 6 years in prison. The judge, knowing full well that he's not a criminal, that he didn't commit any crimes. What we have here is federal bureaucracies creating criminals out of law-abiding Americans. And if we keep allowing this to happen, then we go back to your analogy earlier of Stalin and Lenin and Hitler that put their political enemies in prison. They either killed them or just locked them up. We're doing that now. And these are all leftovers from the Obama administration. And there's no way that President Trump or anybody else can drain the swamp without addressing this and getting these innocent people out of prison. And that's another thing that I am running on to do exactly that.
You know, also the Hammonds, who are now in jail simply because they set a small backfire, tiny backfire, to protect their property from a wildfire that was going across public lanes. And, of course, the BLM was also operating in that same area. And it was a federal prosecutor, not a local judge, who decided that they would throw the book at them, charging them with terrorism. Terrorism. It's absolutely criminal what the federal government is doing.
Yeah, they're on our list. If you'll go to thefreedomcoalition.com, you'll see that the Hammonds are mentioned specifically on there, the land rights issue, the Bundy's situation, and then Cox and Kettler, which is a gun control issue in Kansas, and how Eric Holder came in and tried to teach Kansas that you might allow that, but we don't. And Cox actually made a suppressor for a rifle, and Kettler just bought one. That's all he did, is he bought one, as numerous law enforcement officers had in that same community. And yet both of them became felons for the rest of their lives. They didn't go to prison, but they're felons for the rest of their lives. And one of them is a disabled Marine, a handicapped Marine, and he was disabled in the war. And that's another thing I say. We have got to get out of Afghanistan. We've been there 16 years. None of my opponents are saying that. Does anybody even know why we're there anymore? 16 years in Afghanistan. How ridiculous.
I know why we're there. We're there for the lithium and the other things that they're going to put in batteries. But you're right. There is no definition of what winning means, and there is no end to this war.
No. And so Rand Paul and I totally agree on that issue. We're not the world's police. We're not supposed to be the world's police. And even John McCain could not articulate why we're there anymore. He supports us being there. Ridiculous. And I tell everybody, this election comes down to one simple thing. You can elect a Tweedledee, Tweedledum, mainstream establishment Republican. Go ahead, vote for another John McCain Republican, or you can vote for a true blue Barry Goldwater Republican, someone who will stand for the Constitution and stand for the principles of liberty upon which this country was founded. If you want that, if you want to make that clear choice, you have the opportunity in this race, District 8 Congress in Arizona.
That's a great analogy because, of course, both John McCain and Barry Goldwater came from Arizona. Real contrast there. But it is very imperative because, as you point out, we got Rand Paul. We got Walter Jones, congressman. They will speak out against these endless wars that don't have a we don't even have a definition of what it means to win. So how can we possibly win? How can we ever be finished? Because we don't even know what we're fighting for. Yeah. But we need to have more people like you in Congress. If we're ever going to push this back, we can't do it with just one or two individuals in Congress. And it is so important. You know, right now we're coming up to primary season and people are taking a look at this. And that's really where you get your choices. But this is a special election coming up a week from tomorrow. Very important for people to support Sheriff Mack. You can find him on Twitter at Sheriff Mack. Also, his website is where you can contribute to the campaign and give them some money to run more radio ads in this final week, SheriffRichardMack.com. I'll give you the last couple of minutes, Sheriff Mack.
Well, you know, I just have gratitude in my heart for this process and for the people that are helping. And let me tell you, anybody who donates over $50, my wife and I will send you back a couple of Sheriff Mack bumper stickers. Those were those, you kind of had them across the screen at the top. Sheriff, I think it says Sheriff Mack or Sheriff Richard Mack for Congress. And yeah, that green up at the top, Sheriff Richard Mack. And then at the bottom of that, it'll say United States Congress. If you do donate over $50, we'll send you that back. I don't care how many people, we'll send them back to you. And thank you so much for having me. Thanks. My best to Alex. But here's to
Liberty. Oh, absolutely. And you got a picture there of Ted Nugent. He's backing your campaign, right?
Well, he's backing me. He and I did a video back in the summer about these innocents in prison, about Sam Girard and the Hammonds and the Bundys. Mm-hmm. And that's a quote that he made on that video. He and I are good friends. We've done a lot of work together for freedom. And Larry Pratt, again, he has a comment about me. Judge Napolitano also about me and my Supreme Court case. But this is all about what we're going to do for freedom today and tomorrow. And everybody can join this cause no matter where you are. Anywhere in the country, you can donate, you can get behind this.
And absolutely.
We can all do it together. Thank you again, David, for having me.
Well, thank you, Sheriff Mack, and good luck to you. And again, if you want to contribute to this and actually help to get somebody in Congress who will walk the walk, who's already done it, not just paid lip service to the Constitution, but fought for the Second Amendment and the Tenth Amendment all the way to the Supreme Court and fought, that's Sheriff Richard Mack. You can contribute at SheriffRichardMack.com. Thank you so much, and good luck to you, Sheriff.
Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're just talking to Sheriff Mack, who is running for Congress in a special election. Somebody who has stood for the Constitution, the Second Amendment, the Tenth Amendment, and who understands that we cannot continue to have endless wars. And I mentioned Walter Jones, Republican from North Carolina, another person I have a great deal of respect for, who has stood up and said, we need to have America's anti-war, we need to have a war tax, is what he said. Okay? We need to have a pro-soldier, anti-war, war tax. Because nobody likes taxes, but most people don't really think about taxes in conjunction with the wars. We just continue to multiply these things, and every time we go into another war, every time we set a country on fire, we go there forever. And I know exactly why we are in Afghanistan and have been there now for 17 years. And it was just a couple of years ago we had people in the military saying, well, we're not, you know, I don't think we're going to be leaving there for another couple of decades. I agree with them. I think that was a rare moment of candor from the military industrial complex. They're there for the lithium. They're there for the poppy seeds. They like to be a major supplier of heroin and other things like that. Plus, lithium is going to be a core ingredient for the batteries that they're forcing all of us to go to. We're talking about the wars that we've had for oil. Well, we're going to have wars over lithium, and people are lining up to get that right now. This is like the early 20th century, people lining up to secure their monopolies on petroleum. Now they're lining up to secure their monopolies on lithium. That's why we're there, folks. That's why we're there. That's why we're not going to be leaving anytime soon. I don't like to see our military used like an empire. I'm with Smedley Butler on that. I don't care if we're there fighting for the fruit company or the petroleum company or Elon Musk's battery company. I don't want to be in these kind of wars. That's not a proper use of the military. And any Christian ought to want to throw up to see us acting like gangsters, because that's really what we're doing. Say, we're going to go into this area, we're going to take their resources, we're going to kill anybody that gets in our way. And we'll put in tyrants and despots to keep them in line, and we'll support them. This is nothing but colonialism, whatever you want to call it. So we've got Walter Jones, as I point out, military.com, a maverick lawmaker on the House Armed Services Committee, has revived a proposal that was made a few years ago, a dedicated war tax that would draw attention to military spending and force Americans to confront the cost of defense. Or I would say, if I wasn't writing for military.com, I would say to confront the cost of our endless wars of empire. Representative Jones, a North Carolina Republican, is perhaps best known for his advocacy on behalf of troops and military families, despite staunch opposition to recent wars, including those in Iraq and Afghanistan. Let me explain to you that this is not a conundrum here. This is not something that is should produce any kind of cognitive dissonance on anybody. If you want to support the troops, you don't send them to war unnecessarily. We have an army to defend our country. We used to call it the Department of War until we turned into an empire. And we started creating wars everywhere. Then we called it the Department of Defense. Now, it's really the Department of War now more than ever. A Department of Endless Wars, what they really ought to call it. And Rand Paul says, is our military budget too small or is our mission too large? Can we get a federal government that fits inside the Constitution? Can we get a military that fits inside the Constitution? That is the question. That is the question. And again, it all goes back to the Christian foundations of our country and the idea that we would not be the ones to initiate war. It's called the just war concept. It was something that was formulated by Christians. They said, we're going to not go to war except when we are attacked first, and we will stop the war when there is no more threat to us. That's basically the same principle as when somebody breaks into your home. You're allowed to defend yourself with lethal force if they're coming at you. But if they're just taking your stuff, you don't shoot them in the back. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We talked to Sheriff Mack in the last hour. And, of course, he's somebody who's defended the Second and Tenth Amendment. He's running in a special election in Arizona. You can contribute to that campaign, SheriffRichardMack.com. Great thing to do at this moment, because we're looking at yet another fight to try to take down the Second Amendment. I'm going to play for you what Chuck Todd had to say. He is calling for abolishing the Second Amendment, because that's what you would have to do. It is the law of the land. It is the supreme law of the land. And the people who created it knew that the way that they would take away our freedoms in terms of self-defense would be by a gradual process of infringement around the edges. Constantly clipping it away around the edges until there's nothing left. In the same way that you have somebody put a fence that used to be on the property line. They move it a few feet onto your property. And if they leave it there long enough, then it becomes their property legally. And that's what the government has been doing to our rights, gradually infringing upon them. They knew that the Congress could come in and very easily just restrict religious freedom or the freedom of speech in the First Amendment by making a law. But they knew that they weren't going to make a law and take people's guns. So it'd have to be a gradual process of shaving it away around the edges until there was nothing left. Then they'd take the what's remains. But you have to amend or get rid of the Second Amendment, and that's what these people are now proposing. So here's Chuck Todd on calling for abolishing the Second Amendment.
Isn't the difficulty here legislatively the Constitution, which is Bret Stephens's point in the New York Times, which is he's calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment, and he says the United States has by far more guns in more hands than any other country in the developed world. It has by far the highest incidence of firearm-related homicides and suicides. Correlation is not causation, but since Americans aren't dramatically crazier than other nationalities, what other explanation is there? However,
can't be any other explanation, can there?
Unlike other Western democracies.
Yeah, I mean, getting rid of the Second Amendment is just, it's not realistic. It's right. A nice intellectual exercise that people might want to have, but it's not realistic. I do think that there is some potential on the state and local piece of this seems much more ripe than, look, Congress is deadlocked. They can't even barely keep the government open.
No.
Right? And so the idea that they're going to do something here, and they're also to a certain extent owned by the NRA. The NRA spent $55 million in the 2016 elections. That's like more than twice as much as they did in 2012. So, you know, the idea that they're going to do something in this atmosphere is history doesn't show that'll happen, but also just the parties. The Republicans are much stronger on this issue. This is a top-tier issue for them, and for Democrats, it isn't really.
Not a voting issue. Well, Cornell, at the NRA, I think their great strength here has been how they've re-messaged gun ownership, and they've wrapped it in the flag.
Right, and by the way, and Democrats
wrapped
have
it
been
in the
more
flag.
Afraid of the Republican base than they have been of, quite frankly, the middle swath of America.
You know what? The flag is wrapped in the Second Amendment. There wouldn't be a government if we didn't need one to support our God-given rights. And that's the purpose of all of the amendments in the Bill of Rights. It's about individual rights, and it's about government being created to protect and to defend those rights. And when the government becomes destructive of those rights, then it is the right and the duty of the people to alter or abolish that government, and handguns can come in pretty convenient for doing that. The alternative, what you don't see in America, is what you have seen in other countries. As I point out, just today, we've got a fight between the Turkish government and the Dutch government because the Dutch government is going to recognize and formally classify the events of 1915 when 1.5 million, we're not talking about 17 people or 25 people or whatever the number of people that are killed. That's a tragedy. You know what's a greater tragedy? 1.5 million people. But as Stalin said, you know, the death of one individual is a tragedy, but the death of a million people is a statistic. And so they just ignore this. And they ignore the conditions that allow for genocide to happen. Our founders understood that. Our high school students do not. And that's the real danger to our civil liberties, to our country, to our children's freedoms. Even if our children understand this, these kids that are going through the high school right now really don't. They don't know the history, they don't know the reasons for the Second Amendment, and they naively think that somehow you're going to have all of these things disappear because some politician in Washington waves their legislative ability at it, passes a piece of paper and waves that around. It's all going to disappear. No, it didn't. It didn't. Had 1.5 million people killed by the Turks, Armenians, who are basically Christians for the most part, and it was a religious aspect of it, but that's the means by which this can happen, to remove people's ability to defend themselves. So we see the student survivors slamming Trump, saying he blames everybody but the shooter and the lack of gun control in our country. You even blame the students. We did report him. We tried. You reported them to a government, a government that did not protect you. And as President Trump pointed out, the main thrust right now of the FBI seems to be political intrigue and not basic law enforcement. They did not do their duty in multiple ways. But, of course, many people at the local and state level did not do their duty. but we're going to give them a monopoly on the use of force. And we're not going to allow anybody anywhere in society to be able to protect themselves or other people. Instead, we're going to wait for however long it takes for the police to get to a situation. As they pointed out, one of the sheriffs there in Florida pointed out, the best response time you're going to see from police is going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. This was all finished within 3 minutes. But the Florida students are vowing to hold lawmakers accountable. This isn't about the GOP. This isn't about the Democrats. This is about us creating a badge of shame for any politicians accepting money from the NRA and using us as collateral, said a high school student who clearly knows a great deal about how life works. Not understanding, as you just heard, MSNBC and Chuck Todd, who was on, he was on NBC, talking about the fact, the NRA. Let's talk about Big Pharma. Let's talk about what's really going on here. You know, we got people like Stephen King, who doesn't know MS-13 from an AR-15. Seriously. This is from MRC TV. This was somebody tweeting out, Rick Wilson says, you're a hell of a lot more likely to be killed in Florida by an opioid overdose than by MS-13. But, we'll appeal to our base. And then Stephen King replies to that and says, don't tell that to the parents of the kids who got shot in Broward County today, sport. In other words, MS-13 wasn't involved there, the gang. But he's thinking this is an AR-15. And this is what we're up against. Celebrities, high school students, and people with an agenda to take away your ability to defend yourself, because nothing will do for them other than outright prohibition of guns. Remember when we filmed at a gun control rally here in Austin a couple of years ago? We had a Mother's Demand Gun Control type of rally. It might have even been them. And we had one of the local officials here in Austin, which is very much for gun control there. And one individual showed up with a sign. And they were doing everything they could to cover his sign so that nobody could see it. And it was stop gun confiscation. And he was singled out by the speaker, the guy who is, I think, the number two in city government behind the mayor. And he pointed at him and he said, you hang on to that sign, we're going to make it come true. I say, they're not going to be satisfied with anything other than gun confiscation. But now they have a new army of angry students, and they're very, very happy about this. We've got the Washington Post saying, Florida students plead with Congress. It's all about the guns. No, it isn't all about the guns. Saying, we will be silent no more. School walkouts are planned across the U.S. calling for gun control after the Florida massacre killed 17. Well, go ahead. Walk out of the school. Because they're not teaching you anything of any value. They're not teaching you anything about history, about other people's experiences. You haven't had any experiences, kids. And you haven't learned anything about history, about the genocides, about the tyrannies, about why we have a Second Amendment. So go ahead, walk out of school. Because all they're doing is filling your head with hatred and racism and Marxism. And you're better off not even being there. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. That's right. The Russians are coming. That's right. The Paul Revere thing. Of course, the interesting thing about that, the Russians are coming. That old movie starred Carl Reiner. Rob Reiner's dad was the star of that movie. Rob Reiner ought to know better to run down the street screaming, the Russians are coming. But he's also screaming out, Trump is mentally ill. No, actually, it's Hollywood that is mentally ill. People like Rob Reiner, the meathead. Remember that narrative? It's kind of funny. You go back and you look at All in the Family and how they had picked Archie Bunker to be the guy that was going to be their whipping boy, their straw man, that they were going to attack conservatives. And everybody said, you know, I really agree with Archie Bunker. It was Rob Reiner, the hippie, social justice warrior, virtue signaling character that was going to explain the world to all of us. And everybody hated his character. But that was actually who Rob Reiner is. I mean, that's who this guy has been now for the last, I don't know, decades. What was that, 70s that they had All in the Family on? And ever since then, for the last 40-some-odd years, we've had Rob Reiner still in character as Meathead and still losing the argument. Nobody is buying his stuff, but now he gets more shrill as the days go by, adopting both his father's The Russians Are Coming stuff and his continuing leftist politics. As Breitbart points out, he's escalated his attacks on President Trump yesterday, taking to social media, demanding that GOP patriots. Now, I wonder what he defines as a patriot. Oh, that'd be anybody that overthrows President Trump. That would be a patriot. The GOP patriots take a stand to end what he calls the sickness of the presidency. I think we ought to end the sickness of his Hollywood stuff just by boycotting it. We don't need to have a law prohibiting it. But all these people who are out there pushing prohibition and so forth on the left, I think it's, you know, it's important to remind them from time to time, as I do, that once upon a time we had a Supreme Court that said there is no First Amendment protection for film or for entertainment. They said that. They actually threw a guy in jail and gave him a massive fine, threw him in jail for many years and gave him a massive fine for what they said was a film that didn't agree with what Woodrow Wilson wanted to do at the time. Woodrow Wilson wanted us to go to World War I with the British. And this guy that got thrown in jail and got a massive fine, produced a film called The Spirit of 76 about the about the American Revolution. And it portrayed the British, guess what, in a negative light because they were trying to keep us from having our freedom. They were telling us that they were, and they did. They used force to try to prevent Americans from having self-government. And he put that in the film. And Woodrow Wilson said, wait a minute, that makes the British look like bad guys, and I'm trying to tell Americans that we've got to go fight a war in Europe on the side of the British. So they told him, don't do it. He did it. They censored it once in Chicago. Then he reopened the film in L.A., and he put the deleted scenes back in, at which point they put him on trial, fined him, and jailed him. He went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, you don't get any First Amendment protection for film. And so now you've got all these people like Rob Reiner, and they want to take away our First Amendment speech on social media, isn't it interesting? And they want to take away our Second Amendment, and they want to take away all of these things. So maybe what we should do is just go back and revive that Supreme Court decision and jail these people. That'd probably change their tune, wouldn't it? He says, how much longer do we have to put up with a mentally ill film industry? No, he meant, said mentally ill sociopath. That's what he was saying. Yeah, it's not the film industry that's mentally ill. I mean, go take a look at most of the movies that are playing if you want to see mental illness portrayed on the screen by people like Harvey Weinstein. Totally perverted, totally mentally ill, and portraying it on the screen for everybody, dragging our society down. Yeah, that's Rob Reiner and his friends. He says, when the effed up psyche of the leader of the free world comes before the horrific deaths of innocent children, it's time for GOP patriots to stand up and end this sickness. Okay, so that's what, it's the Russians that are coming. And we've got Mueller on Friday after this program ended. This phony indictment of Russians. And I guess maybe they're going to put Mueller on a plane and send him over to Russia so he can personally arrest these guys. Bob Mueller, FBI, step on the plane, please. I've already sent him over there once with uranium stuff as special emissary for Hillary Clinton. So I guess we could send him back over and he could arrest these Russians. Indicting people, folks, is not proof of guilt. As we say, every time they put out these indictments, it's like it's trumpeted as if it is a conviction, first of all. And an indictment is something where the prosecutor goes before a grand jury. It's a little bit more like a democracy than you have at the FISA court. There you only go before a single judge. But for a grand jury indictment, you've got a single prosecutor who goes before his hand-picked jurors, and he lays out a case. And he's really just trying to see if he can get charges on some of these people so that he can bring them into court and try them. So it's really kind of testing the strength of his case That's really the only purpose of a grand jury, because a grand jury is going to do what the prosecutor wants. You can indict a ham sandwich, as the saying goes. So it isn't a question of whether or not there's sufficient. It's not a conviction. There's nobody arguing the other side. And when you've got a situation like this, there's nobody going to be arresting these people either. So what is the purpose of this? Well, it's to try to keep his investigation going, obviously. So he says the Russians conducted information warfare against the U.S. during the election. And there's a problem with that, because how did they, if they conducted information warfare against America, as Scott Adams said, the Dilbert creator, he put out a thing. He says, well, I'm going to get the, you don't have any power to arrest these people, but I'm going to get them for you. Hey, Russia. These people that you tasked with taking over the election, they really screwed up the job. They only spent like $40,000 or whatever. Totally ineffective what they did. They didn't spend enough ads to really make a difference. And that's what we're hearing from a lot of people. So you tell Vladimir Putin, hey, these guys are working for you. You need to either fire them or send them to a gulag because they didn't do the job. Facebook is saying that as well. The Facebook VP says the majority of Russian ads spent happened after the election. This is the Facebook VP of advertising, Ron Goldman. He tossed a hand grenade, reports Zero Hedge, in the Russian meddling narrative in a string of tweets responding to Mueller's absurd indictment of 13 Russian nationals. That's my adjective there, absurd. Running a bot farm, he said, which according to Mueller, via Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, was unsuccessful at influencing the 2016 election. So they unsuccessfully attempted to influence the election. So let's indict them for that. As Goldman of Facebook, the VP of advertising at Facebook, pointed out, the majority of advertising purchased by Russians on Facebook occurred after the election. So not only did they not buy enough, but they didn't even know when the election was. They're kind of looking like those stranded Russian sailors, and Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. They're not here to start a new war against us, but we are going to do it for them. Because the real point, if they were trying to do anything, was to divide the country. But we've had more of that done by Americans. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. And you want to talk about information warfare. Let's talk about this Russian narrative that continues on. The fact that, oh, they hacked the election. And again, what happened on Friday with Mueller indicting. And again, it's not a conviction as the media is touting it. This is simply an indictment. And he can get an indictment against anybody he wants. And it is totally meaningless, especially when it is against foreign citizens who aren't here in the United States. Who's going to go arrest these people? And then you had the Facebook VP of advertising, Ron Goldman, say, well, you know, the other thing that complicates this is that not only is this a literal drop in the bucket of what was spent, regardless of whether you think this is effective or not, the quantity of this was incredibly small, and it came after the election. The majority of the Russian ad spending happened after the election, says the Facebook VP of advertising. Folks, this is the worst kind of fiction that we're seeing here. And then the obvious question that CBS asked to John Podesta. And here's that clip. Let's play that Podesta clip.
States. So you can't prove that it did affect the outcome, but it certainly seems likely that it had some impact.
But it does beg the question, how is it that these Russian operatives knew to focus on purple states like Michigan and Wisconsin and your campaign didn't?
Well, of course, we spent a lot of time and energy and effort in all those states.
Hillary Clinton herself did not spend much time in those states.
You know, we had Tim Kaine was there. Barack Obama was in. And she spent enormous time in Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Sure.
And we spent a lot of effort. We had more staff in Wisconsin than even President Obama had in 2012. But I think that begs the question. I think we focused on the places we thought were that were, you know, in contest. And in the end of the day, we fell short in those states. And I think that this,
in other words, you lost.
Yeah. Effort by the Russians could have tilted the election in Donald Trump's favor. But I think what the real issue is. is, you know, how he's reacted to.
So how he's reacted to, that's the real issue. How he's reacted to a phony narrative, how he's reacted to a cooked up fake file of dirty dossier that was shopped around, that the Obama administration and the highest officials at our law enforcement organizations, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, they all put together a conspiracy to try to take Trump out. And the issue, folks, is not what they did. The issue is how President Trump reacted to that. But I thought it was interesting when, you know, he's saying, well, of course, it's not a lot of money, but, you know, if it's applied in the right places, you can't argue that it didn't affect the election. Well, we can argue because he hasn't proven his case. They still haven't proven their case. What they say is, we have an assertion that the Russians elected President Trump. Now you disprove that. And they offer absolutely no proof. And so the great question that was asked, good for the person there at CBS, say, okay, so you're saying that they strategically applied this minute amount of effort in just the right places to turn a couple of key areas, and that turned the election for President Trump. Why did the Russians know where to go and you didn't, John Podesta, head of the Clinton campaign? And then the Washington Post just admitted that Russian propaganda was actually factual. See, this is their narrative. When you had an insider, and we've had William Binney and others prove that, William Binney, the chief global technical head of the NSA for decades, he knows what he's talking about. He said, we can look at the timestamps on this, and we can see how long it took for this stuff to transfer. And we know, and we've verified now a couple of years after the fact, that no, this could not have been hacked abroad and so forth. This was handed to somebody, which is what we had been told by former British ambassador. Said, I went to the United States to be handed the information, the DNC files, showing how crooked they were. Is there any question that the DNC was crooked? We've even had Donna Brazile, who had worked for years for the Clintons and was the hand-picked replacement, go in there and talk about how crooked Hillary Clinton was and how they'd turned this against Bernie Sanders. There were a lot of people in the DNC that were upset with Hillary Clinton, how they had controlled this situation. And so you had whistleblowers who turned this information over. And then we started to see how corrupt they were. And to try to salvage this, they said, oh, who gave them that information? It must have been the Russians. So we, you know, don't look at the information, whatever you do. Don't read this stuff. How did they get it? And that's now what John Podesta is saying. Well, it isn't a question of whether or not they hacked the election. I thought it was. I thought that's what Mueller's been investigating, the case that he was trying to make on Friday. Oh, no, it isn't about that at all. It's about how Trump reacted to that. See, that's the way they cleverly misdirect people as they're starting to see their crimes. And so the Washington Post says, well, you know, all this stuff that we're saying is Russian propaganda. Well, it was actually U.S. mainstream media, and it was actually factually correct. Citing an analysis by Columbia University social media researcher Jonathan Albright, the Washington Post noted that the majority of the quote-unquote Russian propaganda, unquote, that was spread was made up of factually accurate stories from American sources. He said Russian-controlled Twitter accounts, all right, but he said they were far more likely to share stories produced by widely read sources of American news and political commentary. The stories themselves were generally factually accurate. Okay? So what they don't want you to see and what they don't want you to talk about is the fact that we got a chance, in spite of all their attempts to misdirect us, in spite of their attempts to use the Russian red herring, you know, draw a smelly fish of where did this come from across the trail of the fox to throw the hounds off the track. In spite of that, people still saw Hillary Clinton, saw what she was about, because what was revealed was true about the DNC. What was revealed from Podesta's emails was true. And when people saw the truth, they rejected Hillary Clinton. Also got it from WikiLeaks. But here's the good point about this. They keep putting out this narrative saying the Russians hacked the election. The Russians hacked the election. The Russians are hacking. The Russians are hacking. Grab your kids and your guns. And they kept going back and said, well, we don't mean that they actually got into the voting machines. No, that's what the American government and the political parties do. They actually get into the machines to rig the elections. But people are hearing this, well, the Russians hacked us. The Russians hacked us. The Russians are hacking. And they're still hacking, they say. And so the good news is now you've got people saying, you know what, we need to go back to paper ballots. And that's good news. Because while paper ballots can still be rigged, it's far, far harder. And for all those high school students in Florida, I'll just explain to you, we don't live in a perfect world. There is no perfect solution. The question is, what do we do to make things better? What can we do to minimize how easy it is to really hack the election? And that means we get rid of these electronic voting machines. You've got in Virginia, election officials have gone back to paper ballot system as a way to prevent any foreign interference, reports the Boston Globe, because they don't want you to think about any domestic corruption. So it's all about foreign interference. Fine. Make it about foreign interference. Make it about foreign interference. But let's just get rid of these electronic voting machines. They were created, the biggest company, the first company that was there was created in Venezuela to rig elections for Hugo Chavez. And Smartmatic was involved in questionable elections throughout Central and South America and the Philippines in the wake of that. And they are still involved in that. And all of these systems are easily hacked. In Georgia, lawmakers are considering legislation to replace a touchscreen voting system with paper. It's not a perfect system. It's just a far, far, far more secure system than what they're pushing on us. So the interesting thing is, as we look at this and we ask Podesta, okay, well, why weren't you smart enough to use a tiny amount of Facebook ads to switch the election? We've also got Sanders, totally silent on the claim that the Russians backed him in 2016. We got Director Michael Moore, who was a Russian pawn, as they point out, in the anti-Trump protest at Trump Tower. Again, we see the left out there, but all they can do is say, the Russians are hacking, the Russians are hacking. Look, when we come back, I want to end up the last segment that we've got. I want to talk a little bit about drugs again, because we had a very interesting statement in Philadelphia about what the district attorney is going to do about the opioid epidemic. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit about prohibition there. Get your speakeasy music ready. We're going to talk about prohibition. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of a couple of sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what supports this program. We have all Super Blue products. That's our mouthwash and toothpaste that has not only no fluoride, but it does have iodine and nano silver to fight bacteria that lead to gum disease, that leads to tooth loss, that leads to heart disease. Great toothpaste. If you haven't tried this stuff, this is why we put it on sale from time to time, so you can try this. And once you try it, we know you're going to want to have this toothpaste all the time. Again, our Super Blue products are now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have a couple of other specials. Self-Wars, the Real Red Pill, both 50% off. Our newest product, Icarin, a powerful formula to support your liver and kidneys and detoxify your body. That newest product, Icarin, is available at 50% off. And finally, we have an InfoWars Life Daily Digestive Pack, Carnivore and Floor Life, a digestive aid as well as a probiotic for an unprecedented 50% off. Take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, that's what funds this program, and we really do appreciate your support. Very quickly, let's take a look at some of the Democrat mafia news that's come out in the last day or so. First of all, and we're going to get to the Arkansides in just a moment, we've got President Trump calling out Obama for the mysterious transfer of $1.7 billion of a cash bribe to the Iranians, his buddies, you know. Valerie Jarrett was born in Iran. Her parents chose Iran over America. That's why she was born there. And, of course, President Obama chose Iran over the interests of America as well. And President Trump tweeted out, never gotten over the fact, this was yesterday, a lot of tweets he had yesterday, never gotten over the fact that Obama was able to send $1.7 billion in cash, he puts that in uppercase, in cash to Iran. And nobody in Congress, nobody in the FBI, nobody in his Justice Department called for an investigation. And just to remind you, when that happened, January the 17th, 2016, the primaries were already well underway. A cargo plane with $400 million in foreign currencies, not even American dollars, right? I mean, Clearly, they're trying to cover something up. This is the American government sending money to Iran. Oh, but it was just other money that we just happened to owe them. And the timing is just purely coincidental. And that's why we got it in foreign cash, secretly sent to Iran in the dead of night. The same day, the Iranian regime released 4 American hostages that had been held by Tehran. Obama later told reporters this was not a ransom payment. No, nothing to see here. Move on. He was lying. Former U.S.-Iranian hostage Saeed Abedini told Fox News, today the Iranian regime would not let his plane leave Tehran until the ransom plane arrived. And this is reported by Gateway Pundit. U.S. officials held the ransom cash until the hostages were released. Okay, so there's a quid pro quo here. I'm not going until you land, and we're not going to let the money off of the plane until you hand us those guys. But no, it's just a coincidence, and it's foreign currency and so forth, right? 2 days after Obama sent Iran the ransom cash, the U.S. government wired 13 individual payments for $99,999,999.99. I mean, that's even better than Herman Cain's 999. You got a long list of 999s. What is it? If it was one penny more, it'd be 100,000, and that would trigger some red flags with different people, okay? Each of them with an independent MICR. And so 13 payments of just under $1 million. Sorry, $100 million, just under $100 million. Anyway, this is the Obama people, okay? And they've used that cash now. They've traced that to terrorist events. That's Obama for you. Let's take a look at the Clintons. We now have news of an Arkanside. We've got Billy Jack Haynes, 62, released a video this week. And in it, he's saying that a criminal politician in Arkansas covered up the murders of a couple of teenagers. Remember, these are teenagers who were found. They were run over by a train. They said they quickly called it a suicide. The rest of us called it an Arkanside. The state medical examiner called it a suicide and then revised his ruling and said, well, no, actually, they had passed out. They didn't kill themselves by laying down on a train waiting for it to come. No, they had actually passed out because they'd been smoking that demon weed marijuana. Always the fall guy. Marijuana, always the fall guy. And there's a picture of the two teenagers. They were struck by a Union Pacific train about 4:30 in the morning. So they were out at 4:30 in the morning, and they just happened to be smoking marijuana and passed out and died, according to the medical examiner. That's the story. Now this former professional wrestler, Jack Haynes, has alleged that the murders were connected to a cocaine smuggling ring and a far-reaching cover-up orchestrated by a, quote, criminal politician. Would you know any criminal politicians in Arkansas? I'm struggling here. Anybody in the control booth know anybody, criminal politician in Arkansas? I think we all do. I think we know who we know who they're talking about. Also starts talking about Barry Seal and what he was doing there in Arkansas. Of course, that wouldn't have anything to do with the Clintons. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Let's also take a look at the other side of the drug war. The drug war that the government supports. You know, there's an article on Zero Hedge, how to kill 300,000 Americans and get away with it. You want to talk about mass murder? You want to talk about the gun? No, it's the pill. It's the pill, the legal pill that is being handed out. And we're not even talking about the SSRIs. This is the opioids. And so Zero Hedge has a great article, How to Kill 300,000 Americans and Get Away with It. It said this is a step-by-step guide. Here's their 13-point plan here. Step number one, in 1996, Uncle Sam awards a 17-year government patent monopoly to Purdue Pharma to be the exclusive supplier of OxyContin, addictive, potentially deadly opioid painkiller. A massive multi-billion dollar profit incentive to get as many people addicted as possible without any generic competition, so you keep that profit motive intact. Next step is step number two, you fuel the use of OxyContin. Have the government cover the cost of it through Medicaid and Social Security and disability insurance. Step number three, you make sure that you have policies that put people in economic straits in the Midwest so that they're looking for something to get them over the struggles of life, depression, poverty, and so forth. Step number four, you penalize any hospital that gives a poor review or ratings for not adequately treating pain. So you start putting pressure on doctors and hospitals to over-medicate for pain, because that's step number four. Step number five is banning medical marijuana. And then step number six is allow the doctors to be sued if they don't prescribe enough painkillers. Step number seven, you move as many opioid painkillers to Schedule 2. Remember, we got the four schedules that the United Nations gave us, and we obediently adopted and called it our war on drugs? No, it was the UN's war on drugs. They created four schedules. They put the drugs in there. So opioids, they put it in. They moved it down to Schedule 2, and that would prohibit refills. And then that had the effect that doctors would prescribe a 30-day supply for patients that might only need a 3-day supply. Next thing you do is you allow the profit motive of the patent monopoly to be extended, because you say, well, people are crushing this down and selling it, so we're going to make non-crushable pills. Then they wind up melting them down and then injecting them, which makes them far more deadly, but it allows the company to now re-up their patent for another 17-year monopoly. See? That's how we go. And so it goes on and on and on. They got 19 steps here. Some people are starting to get wise to this. Other people are still chanting in the streets, get rid of the guns, get rid of the guns, make the guns go away. You know what? We're not going to be able to get the opioids to go away. We've learned that from the war on drugs. But we can do some things to try to minimize it. And we can do some things to treat it as a medical issue rather than a law enforcement issue. And that's what they're doing in Philadelphia. We have Larry Krasner is suing Big Pharma, and he's dropping marijuana possession charges because he says this is not a law enforcement situation. This is a medical treatment situation. And I don't know who this guy is. I mean, he might be a Democrat. I probably don't agree with him on anything other than this. But, you know, even like Ron Wyden, who I know I don't agree with on anything, except the fact that he pointed out to us that the NSA was spying on everybody, and that James Clapper was lying to everybody, and that James Clapper was the worst liar we've ever seen testify before Congress. And so for that alone, I agree. I celebrate Ron Wyden, even though I don't agree with him on anything else. And this guy, I don't know if I agree with him or disagree with him on anything else, but he's telling the truth about what's going on with the opioid epidemic and what we need to do. He and the mayor admitted that the war on drugs is a failure, that we can't solve this with law enforcement. This is something that the left has been saying about drugs for a long time. Why can't they understand that about guns? And if the right can understand it about guns, why can't they understand it about drugs? You're not going to prohibit things and make them disappear. You can't wish them into a cornfield. Thanks for listening. That's the end of our program.